From the Mount Hor, they set out by the way to the Red Sea, to go around the land of Edom. But the people became impatient on the way. The people spoke against God and against Moses. "Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food and no water, and we detest this miserable food." Then the Lord sent poisonous serpents among the people, and they bit the people, so that many, many Israelites died. The people came to Moses and said, "We have sinned by speaking against the Lord and against you. Pray to the Lord to take away the serpents from us." So Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said to Moses, "Make a poisonous serpent and set it on a pole, and everyone who is bitten shall look at it and live." So Moses made a serpent of bronze and put it upon a pole, and whenever a serpent bit someone, that person would look at the serpent of bronze and live. Holy wisdom, holy word.
So as you probably got, this passage today is from the Exodus journey. The slaves, though they were freed from bondage from Egypt, they found themselves not in paradise, but in the wilderness. And it was not a fun place. Liberation from slavery doesn't mean that life is bliss. They walked and worked and struggled to get by. And all the while, they fought back to the bad old days in Egypt. And as human beings are wont to do, they forgot about the murdered babies, the beatings, the endless labor, and only remembered the good things, like the food. Back in Egypt, they ate well. But in that barren land, there was little to eat. And what there was boring. And, like human beings everywhere, they complained to Moses and God. Now, in the past, God heard these complaints and sent a kind reply. Some quails flew in at night, and everybody had a nice poultry dinner. In the morning, there was manna and nice warm bread. But this time, God must have awakened on the wrong side of the cloud. God is peeved. And instead of sending better food, God sends poisonous snakes. Many people are bitten, and some die. Now, there's nothing like a real crisis of deadly poisonous snakes to put the former non-crisis of boring food into perspective. The people turn to God for help, and God sends a solution. God calls on the people to make a metal snake sculpture and to put it on a stick and to hold it up. So everybody can see it, so that whenever someone was bitten by the snake, they needed only to look upon the uplifted snake sculpture, and they would be spared from death. So God created the crisis, and God created a solution. And humanity learned a valuable lesson. Don't complain to God about the cooking. Now, I grew up in and am about to go back to Missouri. And apart from the joy of a myriad of different kinds of biting, slashing, blood-sucking insects and poisonous spiders, Missouri has three different varieties of poisonous snakes. And though getting bit by one often won't kill you, it will make you very sick. A bite in the leg can lead to your leg swelling up hugely and painfully. So even after the snake on the stick sculpture was created, the people would have still had a hard time. Now imagine taking this story literally and deciding to use God as an example. So when it's time to take the kids on a vacation, you load all three of them into the back seat of the car. And in the front seat, under the front seat, you put a large shoebox. Typically, the kids in the back seat start complaining almost as soon as you get out of the driveway. But it just goes on and on. They keep complaining. They don't like being stuffed in the back of the car. Sally is touching me. They really hated that drive-through meal you got them. They say it was greasy and gross, and how come that town doesn't have a McDonald's? Finally, tired of all the complaining, when you just can't take it anymore, you take out the box from under the seat and you throw it into the back seat with the kids, and an angry timber rattler comes out. There's much screaming from the back seat. Billy yells that Janie, the youngest, has been bit by the snake. Don't worry, you say. You throw a few snake bite kits back to them. If a snake bites you, use this. After a while, you pull over at a rest stop. You retrieve the poisonous viper and put it back in its box. Put it back under the front seat. You put poor dead Janie in the trunk. And you head back out on the road looking for a hospital to give anti-venom shots. Undoubtedly, there will be no more complaining coming from the back seat. The surviving kids will have learned a valuable lesson. They will be utterly obedient. Though it's biblical and uses God as an example, we have to ask ourselves, would this be good parenting? And the obvious answer is no, absolutely not. It's horrible. It's such bad parenting that your children would be taken from you, and they would be emotionally scarred for life. And you would be thrown into prison for a very, very long time. So it begs the question, if we would not approve of this kind of behavior from a human, why would we accept it from God? I believe that the Bible was written by human beings who saw God through the lens of their own lives, through their own culture. So parts of the Bible envision a God like any other God around at the time, a fear-inducing, obedience-demanding, jealous, supreme dominator, like tyrants throughout history. The Bible also has parts in it that envision a God who's just the opposite of that, whose power is based not in fear, but in love. In the past, I was told that since both images of God were in the Bible, both must be true. But I believe that these two images of God in the Bible are there to offer us a choice. I choose the God whose power is love. I don't believe in a God who uses fear to gain obedience. I don't believe in a God who lobs poisonous snakes to silence grumpy followers. The use of violence to inspire fear and gain obedience was and is the dominant notion of power in human civilization. People in power today don't fling venomous vipers, but they do fire people from their jobs. They do throw people in prison. They do drop bombs on them. They do ignore them when they are homeless, desperate, and suffering. Different tactics, but the same power. In the story, the cure is to look at an image of the thing feared According to terror management theory, avoiding death is a driving force in our lives, even though it's not in the forefront of our thinking. We like to go through our lives pretending that we are somehow aloof from death. Studies have shown that when most folks think about death, they get more conservative. Christian students were asked about a fellow Christian student and also a Jewish student. Students giving something else to ponder rated Christian and Jewish students about the same. Those Christian students who were reminded of their own mortality rated the Christian much higher and the Jewish student much lower. German people were interviewed about German products. Those interviewed in front of a department store rated the products of Germany and the products from other nations about the same. Those interviewed in front of a graveyard rated the German products much higher. Students in Iran were asked about suicide missions. Those in the control group were inclined towards peaceful resolutions. Those in the group reminded of their own mortality were much more likely to approve of suicide bombings. In the U.S., those reminded of their own death were much more likely to approve of extreme actions, such as the use of nuclear weapons against perceived enemies. On the whole, fearful people are more likely to endorse conservative leaders and solutions. And so conservatives have linked themselves to issues that promote fear. It is an effective tactic. Which brings us back to the snake on a stick. The snake sculpture was the symbol of the bringer of death. The symbol reminded our fearful ancestors of their mortality. But the symbolic snake on a stick was the source of healing from snake bites. Look upon the thing that you fear and see in it God's power to heal, and so fear no more. The cross was the symbol of death, misery, and humiliation. The Romans wanted people to fear the cross, and in so doing, be cowed into obedience. But Christians took the symbol of crucifixion as a symbol of liberation. Look upon the thing you fear, and see in it hope, and fear no more. Is God one who uses the power of fear to gain obedience? Or is God one who uses love to help us confront our fears and confront those who would seek to use fear to gain obedience? The Bible offers us a choice. If we are able to face our fears, then we cannot be manipulated by them. Dominators have no power over those who are not afraid. When we awaken to the universal embrace of the love of God, we have no more room for fear or hate. Those who want to manipulate us will try to make us fearful. In the Republican response to the State of the Union address this past week, Senator Katie Britt sought to spread fear of refugees and fear of Iran and fear of China. Let's see such rhetoric for the hollow play for power that it is. Let's not spend our lives in fear and reacting to it. Let's look for the wonder, the beauty, and the compassion in our world. Let's see the cross as a sign of the costs of opposing violence and the hope that comes from such acts. This is Lent. And Lent invites us to take a good, hard look at the things we fear and see in them opportunities to demonstrate God's justice and compassion. The eternal awaits in the here and now, even in the gloom of a violent and troubled world. The light is shining. It has always been there. All we need do is look for it and then hold it up for others to see. Amen.